For years, wealth and influence, big business, and politics have been entangled. But over the last 45 years, corporations have overwhelmingly snatched the majority of power from citizens. Leading up to the 2024 presidential election, it was reported that candidate Donald Trump asked the fossil fuel industry to contribute $1 billion to his campaign.
Last month, Donald Trump summoned a who's who of top lobbyists and executives from the oil and gas industry and proceeded to solicit $1 billion from the fossil fuel companies to get him elected, as multiple outlets have now reported. In exchange, the Washington Post reports, quote, he vowed to immediately reverse dozens of President Biden's environmental rules and policies and stop new ones from being enacted. The New York Times says, quote, Trump told the group that they should donate $1 billion to his presidential campaign because if elected, he would roll back environmental rules that he said hamper their industry. He told executives the amount of money they would save in taxes and legal expenses after he repealed regulations would more than cover a $1 billion contribution.
They ultimately invested a remarkable $445 million, and we're seeing the payoff in the headlines today. Congress kneecapped California's zero emission mandate, 4 decades of states' rights precedent gone in a 51-44 vote. The White House, meanwhile, is kickstarting every dormant rig and refinery with an executive order titled, without irony, Unleashing American Energy. And if that wasn't enough, a national energy emergency declaration now lets agencies bulldoze environmental reviews in the name of, quote, critical infrastructure. On the job site, steel bids jumped 20% after blanket tariffs, and solar installers, they're staring down duties north of 3,000% on imported panels. So where does that leave architects specifying high-performance facades, engineers banking on EV-ready grids, or owners counting on IRA tax credits that just got frozen?
That is why today I will also declare a national energy emergency. We will drill, baby, drill.
I'm Demetrius Lynch, and this is Spaces, the podcast where we explore the forces that shape our spaces and how they shape us. Thanks for coming back, everybody. In today's episode, we're dropping into the eye of Washington's policy hurricane. If you had the opportunity to check out my series, Going Green, you'll be primed and ready to get back into this and have a good basis to understand what's going on today. If you haven't listened to it, highly encourage you check it out. I'll link to it in the show notes. On day one of Trump 2.0, executive orders detonated decades of climate rules. Congress torpedoed California's zero emission ambitions, and tariffs sent steel and solar costs sky high. But beneath the headlines lies a maze of fast-tracked permits, frozen tax credits, and looming lawsuits that could flip every decision you make over the next few years. We'll unpack the top 10 moves most likely to impact your budgets, rattle your schedules, or surprisingly open doors to new work, from microreactor campuses to LNG terminals. And we'll get into all of that after this break. Hi, Demetrius here. As you may know, Spaces is part of Gable Media, the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community and beyond. You may have heard me previously mention the development of a brand new membership platform for Gable Media. Well, it's finally here. You can now sign up to be a member at gablemedia.com/members. And as your first major perk, you gain exclusive access to our continuing education program, including AIA credit-worthy courses. That's right. Gable Media is now an official AIA CES provider, and you can get credit for listening to Select Spaces episodes. The days of scouring the internet for online courses and running around town for credit-worthy presentations are over. I've tried out our program, and it is the most convenient way to get your continuing education credits. Now, this membership tier will be limited, so make sure to go to gablemedia.com/members or just click the link in the show notes to gain access today. Okay, everyone. With the speed and sheer amount of action and change that's happening now since the new administration has come in, the Trump's second administration, wanted to take a little time to kind of walk through the actual things that are happening regarding policy changes and laws that are being created that will affect the AEC industry. Upfront, with everything that we've seen, there is clearly a lot of chaos. So you're going to see that through this list and a lot of things to keep in mind as we go forward, because there will be continued lawsuits. And assuming when the next administration comes in, there could potentially be changes to these by the time all of the lawsuits are done. But there's a lot of questions, a lot of chaos right now, but just wanted to give kind of the high level understanding of what's happening and what to be looking out for. Before I get into the top 10, I wanted to kind of go generally over a few things that are happening in addition to these top 10 items. One, there's a lot of appliance and equipment efficiency rollbacks. So that's walk-in coolers and freezers, tankless water heaters, furnaces, microwaves, air purifiers, all that sort of stuff is kind of getting put on hold. So specs are going to be probably changing depending on what owners want to do to meet their budget requirements. From everything that I've been hearing from people, a lot of owners are continuing down the previous path, trying to be more sustainable, but we'll see what happens when they actually can see these comparisons and don't have laws in front of them requiring some of these things. There's also a fast tracking of both conventional energy projects, gas, natural gas. But one interesting thing that I'm not opposed to, and I'm kind of curious to see how this develops, but pursuing nuclear energy. So that's the one item that I think is worth looking into, because as we can see, AI is not going away. The cryptocurrency world seems to be sticking around. Both consume a ton of energy. So that's one thing that we have to figure out. So nuclear energy is probably the most ready-made solution that we'll see how that kind of has a branding issue. So we'll see how that works itself out. A lot of action that's inflating material and clean tech costs, tariffs that are working against solar panels, steel and aluminum, obviously, and all the other various products that we use for the industry are facing a lot of increased costs. Although we're in a pause phase, probably at the time that you're hearing this, towards the end of May, we're a little bit of a pause, but a lot of these tariffs are expected to come back up pretty soon here. So we'll see how that ends up being, but people are expecting a 15 to 25% increase in costs. So keep an eye out on that, especially around the area of the growing net zero industry. I think the current Congress is aiming for major structural changes on several fronts. For example, H.R. 3346 is a bill that was introduced on May 13th, 2025, to abolish the EPA entirely and hand enforcement to the states. In my opinion, this would be a bad move because the EPA, through national funding, is best positioned to do the necessary research, reporting, and standard setting to protect the environment and, in turn, humans and animals. If left to the states, I would say that many state budgets couldn't support it, and frankly, corporate interests and ideologies would likely overpower any state-level EPA. Now, it'll be considered by committee next and is predicted to have little to no chance of being enacted, but the fact that this mindset still exists is a bit concerning. Now, you may have heard of the recent tax bill that was passed by the House. In it, it repeals EV credits and adds a federal EV registration fee. And I'll get into a little bit more how deep these actions go in that tax bill as we get a little bit further into this list. But there's a lot of changes that are happening. So We'll jump into the top 10 items that I've seen that are affecting the building industry and that we should keep an eye out and both prep our clients and planning for ourselves of what's on the horizon. So number 10, recent resolution, HJ Resolution 42, the DOE Appliance Efficiency Certification Rule was nullified on April 29th. This overturned the 2024 updates, which tightened test procedures and reporting for HVAC, refrigeration, and lighting equipment. Manufacturers are now able to keep older, less efficient models on the market. Building specs may no longer default to the higher rated models unless owners insist. So again, this is coming down to owners' decisions. So you're going to want to verify where their mindset is on this whole issue and where their budget lies as far as materials, specs, and equipment. Number 9, CRA resolutions voiding California vehicle emission waivers. And the Senate voted on this May 23rd and the House earlier. So what happened was that the Congress used the Congressional Review Act to cancel EPA's 2022 waivers that allow California and 16 follower states to enforce stricter tailpipe rules and the 2035 gas car sales ban, which I'm sure if you're in California, you've heard of. So much for states' rights. The federal government is basically preventing California from doing what they wanted to do in this regard, as far as having stricter rules for emissions, specifically with cars. There's definitely going to be lawsuits from California and potentially from other states to challenge this, but at least for now, they're being prevented from having these stricter emissions. Okay, number 8. So the current administrator of the EPA, Lee Zeldin, listed 31 rules to weaken or repeal the EPA, including a power plant CO2 limits, which I covered in my Going Green series. We've kind of waffled back and forth between what the Obama administration did, then Trump first administration, then Biden. Now we're going back. 2023 tailpipe standards and the PFAS drinking water limits, which for those that may not know, PFAS stands for polyfluoroalkyl substances. They're a large group of synthetic chemicals used in various consumer products for their water and grease resistant properties. They're often referred to as forever chemicals because they break down very slowly in the environment and can accumulate in the human body over time. They're often used in the production of certain plastics, particularly fluorinated high-density polyethylene, or HDPE, containers. These chemicals can leach into food and beverages. If you've seen any of these reports, we all are littered with plastic now in our bodies and our brains, which I also saw recently that there is now a connection, potential connection of dementia and the amount of plastic in someone's brain. So if you're interested, you can check that out too. I'll probably come back to that at some point. But so they want to reduce those limits as well. And then there is an update to lead and copper rules. For our industry, expect shifting compliance targets. If you're in large scale development campuses, there's going to be targets shifting likely for utilities and water systems. So you want to watch that closely if you're in the early phases or leading up to the start of a project, because all of that's going to be kind of changing. Number 7, disbanding the social cost of greenhouse gases working group and an order to revisit the 2009 GHG endangerment finding. If you're not aware, in 2009, the EPA issued its science-based finding that the buildup of heat-trapping greenhouse gases in the atmosphere endangered the public's health and welfare. This finding reflects the scientific evidence on the cause and impacts of climate change and it was made after thorough rulemaking process, considering thousands of public comments, and was upheld by federal courts. The finding required that the EPA take action under the Clean Air Act to curb emissions of carbon dioxide, methane, and four other heat-trapping air pollutants from vehicles, power plants, and other industries. The EPA today is ultimately repealing that finding. The carbon regulation under the Clean Air Act will go away or be significantly hindered. And energy code stringency and equipment specs are all going to go towards a cost-only metric. Number six, this is a pretty big one. There's going to be a freeze on the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, and the Infrastructure Act during the Biden administration. So Treasury and OMB have paused new awards for the IRA funded tax credits and EV charger grants pending cost-benefit reassessment. So any of your clients that were counting on those incentives, some current ones have been frozen, and then future ones are definitely going to be paused. And again, there's going to be a lot of lawsuits, I'm sure, so we'll see how that finally flushes out. But for a lot of these actions, it's unfortunate because the Inflation Reduction Act and the infrastructure bill brought, I believe, studies show about 1 million jobs thus far and was on track to support roughly 1.5 million jobs every year for the remainder of this decade. All of those jobs heavily concentrated in construction, engineering, and clean energy manufacturing. And we all know how bad we're hurting in our industry with jobs and attracting people into the field. So a lot of that is just tossed to the wayside. A lot of the manufacturing incentives were all clustered in the Southeast and Midwest. So unfortunately, a lot of the people that likely voted for this administration are losing out on these jobs now. I know that they're is an intent to bring back fossil fuel jobs, but studies have shown, even with the added pressure in his first administration to bring those jobs back, those jobs were in decline anyway. People just weren't going for coal jobs and jobs in the fossil fuel industry. So it's sort of an empty push towards kind of a past. The more sustainable industry is kind of the future, and that's what we were building towards, but that has been derailed, and we'll see how bad it actually gets by the end of this term. Number five, the National Environmental Policy Act has a fast-tracked mandate. So they're looking for 12-month deadlines and strict page limits on environmental impact statements. Agencies are already piloting one agency, one document reviews, ultimately highly simplifying research and analysis into potential projects and the potential damage that they can cause depending on what the project is, the location. Again, highly encourage you to check out my Going Green series. There's one particular project, Deepwater Horizon, and how during that project, there is a lot of cut corners as far as researching that drilling site that led to the catastrophe that many of us probably remember. I think that's like episode 7 or 8. So to check that out, to get a sense of what this could mean. But for us, a shorter review time, 12 months and a one-page document, means that your design development milestones, if you're doing these larger projects, working on these larger projects, your design development milestones are going to be tighter and faster turnaround, but the risk for unforeseen issues are going to increase dramatically. Number four, executive order protecting American energy from state overreach. This executive order directs DOJ to sue states and localities over climate-driven building codes, embodied carbon caps, gas appliance bans, or nuisance lawsuits against energy producers. This particularly targets states like California and New York that have electrification codes that are trying to pave the way to a future that's more sustainable. They will challenge all of these current codes. So designers should be aware and watch for injunctions before finalizing any of your MEP strategies. Again, this is another area where there's going to be a lot of lawsuits back and forth. So this is going to be a drawn out process. But as of now, the DOJ is actively going to be going after particularly California and New York. Number three, Executive Order 14162, withdrawal from the Paris Climate Agreement, which was on day one of this second administration. What that did was basically start a one-year exit clock. So we're technically not out of the Paris Climate Agreement at the moment, but by next January, we're expected to be removed. Any rules that had been aligned with the Paris goals, so like life cycle, greenhouse gas emission calculators, and supplier disclosure requirements are all expected to be dismantled, reducing immediate compliance costs, but kind of muddying the long-term global ESG expectations for U.S. Design and construction firms. So anything that was related and in line with the Paris Climate Agreement is all going to be slowly pulled apart over the next year, probably. Number two, the Executive Order 14156, National Energy Emergency Declaration. So this was a play to give a lot of power to the executive branch. This invokes the National Emergency Act and allows agencies to waive any applicable law to accelerate fossil fuel projects and critical minerals mining. So this, again, was all to benefit the fossil fuel industry. And you'll see a lot of movement. A lot of this movement that I've talked about is all in favor of the fossil fuel industry and hindering the runway that we were on a path to build for a more sustainable future, a future that moved away from fossil fuels. So practically what they will do with this executive order is truncate all reviews of natural gas terminals, pipelines. They're going to shorten or skip permitting timelines. And of course, with all of this comes a lot of risk of litigation. So that's something to be aware of if you're taking on any projects in this arena. And number one, the biggest of them all, and started on day one, was Executive Order 14150, Unleashing American Energy. This executive order revoked every Biden climate-oriented executive order, wiping out federal building decarbonization targets, canceled federal zero-emission vehicle mandates, halted implementation of the federal sustainability plan, and instructed every agency to identify, suspend, or repeal rules that, quote, burden domestic energy, which makes no sense because sustainable energy was domestic. So I'm not quite sure how that can be a burden. So from a federal standpoint, all construction specs, criteria, and agency RFPs are already being rewritten. On federal projects, you can expect fewer low embodied carbon or all electric requirements. So this completely transforms, again, everything we were trying to do. But that's essentially where we are today. Some key takeaways: permitting timelines are likely going to shorten, but risk is going to grow. So to be mindful of that, if you're in the sector that works on federal projects, requirements for low carbon specs, energy efficiency, all of that stuff's going to kind of come back. So expect that pivot. And on the other side of that, those that have sort of position themselves as a firm that focuses on sustainability, that's something to keep in mind for your branding and business, is whether you stick with that, which I hope you do, but to keep in mind that there will be business owners that are looking to put out projects that don't, in their mind, have these incurred costs of higher spec equipment. Take the time to try to promote and help people understand and talk to your clients about there's a difference between, you know, having these upfront costs and the overall life cycle costs of the building. Although they can get these cheaper products into their building in the front end, their operating costs are likely going to skyrocket over the life of that building. The resale value isn't going to be quite there, as opposed to another building that has all of the efficiency standards built into them from the get-go. I think this is a time where we, as an industry, have to really step up. Just because you're allowed to put a lesser building together doesn't mean you should, and doesn't mean that it's actually good for you as an owner or for the public. So we all have to kind of step forward and do our best to paint that full picture for our clients and the public. Because there's a lot of, like I started at the front, there's a lot of chaos, misinformation, confusing information that's being pumped out from every direction. So for us as experts, building experts, a lot falls to us to give accurate and full context to our clients and the public of how they should proceed and navigate through these times in particular. As you probably have seen, material price volatility is back, still in aluminum tariffs, solar pricing. This is all going to warrant you kind of revisiting your supply chain and understanding what that means for your projects. Again, building system efficiency is no longer a given with all of the DOE changes and voided rules. Owners are now allowed to opt for cheaper, less efficient equipment. So design teams will need to run analysis on how that impacts their projects and local codes and what happens to future local codes. I haven't heard anything specific in any state thus far as local changes. I would find it hard to believe that people would necessarily go backwards. I think California and New York are going to fight tooth and nail to maintain their current standards. So I don't necessarily expect big changes going backwards for codes, but keep an eye out with your local jurisdiction on anything that they may be looking to change. And with that said, state, local policy conflicts are going to become more common, and DOJ's attacks on state codes means your project requirements could be a moving target during your design. So keep an eye out for any litigation that's happening in your state with the federal government, and if things are being paused or moved or adjusted, it's going to be key for the next, you know, 3.5 years to keep an eye out on any of those lawsuits and what happens there, to kind of have a sense of which way things are moving and how that can affect your project. All right. So that's a snapshot of kind of where we are right now. Were there any specific laws or executive orders that I missed? Let me know in the comments or send me a message at lines.studio/podcasts. It's lynes.studio/podcasts. I hope this was helpful. Thank you for listening if you made it this far. I'll add a bunch of links in the show notes so you can check out a lot of this stuff. And we'll talk again on the next one. Thanks. Thanks for listening. Spaces is brought to you by Lines, my Southern California-based architecture and creative studio that provides services focused on custom homes, home renovations, creative office, and specialty retail spaces. Find out more at lines.studio That's lynes.studio. If you learned something from this episode or think it would resonate with a friend, please share it and rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It really helps others find the show. If you have a question about the built environment or just want to share whatever is on your mind, I'd love to hear from you. You can do that at lynes.studio/podcasts. Looking for similar content? Spaces is a proud member of Gable Media, a digital media platform where you can find even more content like this. Visit gablemedia.com, and that's gablemedia.com. And lastly, before I go, if you want to see additional photos, videos, clips, and other content from this episode, visit lynes.studio/podcasts. Talk soon.